The following podcast is intended for listeners over the age of 18. It contains mature subjects and adult discussion. Listener discretion is advised. As we are not doctors or psychologists, all advice is for novelty purposes only. All advice and discussion comes from our own personal experiences. Yours may well be different.
Welcome to the Swing Set. Climb on up. There's always a swing available. On Life on the Swing Set, the podcast, we explore open relationships and swinging. The pleasures and passions, the promise and pitfalls. We discuss all aspects of swinging in a fun, open, and welcoming fashion with a gleam in our eye, a bounce in our step, our hand down your pants. Ooh, sorry, got ahead of myself. We may be biased. In fact, we most certainly are. But we don't sugarcoat, and each of us speaks honestly and earnestly about our thoughts, ideas, and experiences throughout our very own lives on the swing set. Thanks for swinging by.
Okay, hello and welcome to Life on the Swing Set. This is episode 20, the sexual costumes and masks we wear. In honor of Halloween, we're going to be talking about how we often hide from ourselves and from our partners in the sexual urges and ideas that we have and why we do this. With me in the studio, we have...
This is Ginger.
Hey, I'm Dylan.
This is Shira.
And this is Kidder.
All right, and Kidder, of course, from the wildly successful Sex is Fun podcast, and author extraordinaire will be joining us for tonight's conversations. So before we get started, we do a little thing called business, and we haven't in a while because we've been full of other things to talk about. But I know Ginger has some business here tonight, and then I have a little bit too, so let's see what you got, Ginger.
Well, I was so lucky and excited. I love used bookstores and happened to be in one recently and just looked over and saw this book just screaming to be purchased because the spine said open marriage. And I thought, well, I have to go grab that book. And as we were talking in the Poly Swinger Blurring the Lines podcast, we spoke about, I know we talked about opening up. I think at some point we've mentioned The Ethical Slut by Easton and Hardy, but I knew that this text existed. It's Open Marriage by the O'Neills, Nina and George, circa 1972. And it's just fascinating. I've been just reading as much as I can, as fast as I can. And a lot of what we talk about, a lot of what really fuels our discussions is right here in the text from 1972. And so I just had to kind of put that out there that, wow, you know, this has been a long-standing thread through our culture that non-monogamy has been there. And it's a really cool book. It's a really, really cool book. So they're actually anthropologists. So it's just fascinating to read from their perspective.
Were they living amongst the swingers when they wrote this?
You know, it's hard to tell from how they write. I mean, it really is just they only have one chapter that's specifically about sexual non-monogamy. But what they talk about in the rest of the book is really apparently was very cutting edge for the time about things like, you know, having trust and equality, open companionship, meaning being able to have companionship beyond just your partner, and the idea of, you know, just what we were talking about before, not being able to be everything as one person to another person. So it's really cool stuff. They talk about open marriage just beyond the sexual realm, which really, you know, brings us to that poly gray area that we have been talking a lot about.
Well, that sounds awesome.
You know, I've always wanted to talk to somebody who actually read these books and actually, you know, participated in non-monogamy back in, you know, late 60s, early 70s, just because I don't think things for us have evolved a lot since then. You know, I'm relatively new to it. And from what you're saying, it sounds like they had a lot of the same issues and things to talk about back then that we do now. So what happened between then and now? Nothing. Did we go through, you know, a huge open boom and then we regressed again through the 80s and the 90s and now we're just getting back into it? Or, you know, I'd love to see from, you know, a sociologist or an anthropologist perspective how that went, and you know, see how we got from there to here.
Sexuality does seem to, if we continue to look at history, it does go through cyclical loops. The 70s wasn't the first time that an open marriage concept or non-monogamy was considered. There's various times throughout entire human history where various forms of non-monogamy were experimented with. And then what seems to happen is many times a problem is brought about, is results because, or at least it's thought of because of this lack of sexual chastity. And in some cases that was, you know, children not being taken care of. You know, if we think back before birth control, that did happen. To various people, and that we found a lot of women and children not being taken care of in earlier stages of our history. In the 70s, it kind of ended because of it came about in the 60s, and then it digressed again because other people's needs weren't being taken care of. The idea of women being equal to men was a very new idea in the 60s and 70s,
absolutely.
But it hadn't fully realized itself the way it is now. We said, a lot of people said, women and men should be equal, but women really couldn't earn a living that was anywhere near what a man could earn, even with the same education, if that was even possible in that era. These days, we have something much closer to true equality, so perhaps maybe this time it'll last. I mean, there's more women earning high-end degrees than men this year for the first time ever. So who knows what'll happen in the future. But yes, this loop does seem to occur, and it gets shorter than it used to be. Because
well,
the
it also seems like that the big AIDS crisis of the 80s helped very strongly in putting family values and monogamy back into the you ought to be doing this instead of your hedonistic foolish ways. Back in the
syphilis
80s.
Did the same thing though back in the 1600s. Syphilis was just as deadly as AIDS at one point in human history.
And that's all absolutely true. And what's fascinating about that is although there's this cyclical back into the family values, back into the monogamy, that's not necessarily how it actually happens. People talked the talk but didn't walk the walk. And certainly when it came to, you know, moving up through the 70s, like you said, Kidder, and women pushing for equality, that up until that point, only men had the privilege, so to speak, of being non-monogamous because they were cheating. And women just didn't have that freedom. And then it kind of, you know, we did have the HIV/AIDS emergence, and then, you know, circling back around to safer sex and women's equality, where people are just not just rethinking their marriages as they exist, but people are also rethinking marriage just in general. People just choosing to cohabitate as opposed to, you know, taking the vows.
Well, very cool find at your thrift store there.
I'm very excited.
Very cool. You'll have to let us know once you've read it how accurate it still is to all this stuff.
I will.
Before we get started, I wanted to mention my little bit of business, and it's not really my business. The beautiful kind TBK, who was on our last two shows, today is National Coming Out Day, so you can get an idea of when we're recording versus when the show runs. Today, TBK revealed herself to be Kendra Holliday, who I knew she was, but not many people did. And she came out 100% as the writer for that blog. And I am blown away by her honesty and her willingness to put herself into the public eye and be unafraid to do so.
Go TBK. Wow. I mean, yep. She has a lot of really intense content out there. So it means a lot for her in particular to come out in the way that she has. And I'm really proud of her.
She makes me hopeful for a day where I would feel comfortable coming out as a swinger beyond my social circle.
National Coming Out Day, I encouraged my own friends and family to come out today on all the social networks and such, but I've been out for a little while, so I'm sure it's pretty old news for people. I just keep banging my drum. I'm pansexual and poly, and deal with it.
It's always followed with "and deal with it."
Oh, absolutely.
Notice.
Indignancy.
Okay, so well, righteous indignancy is the cornerstone of any progressive movement, I think.
Nice.
Which segues right into, it doesn't, but I'm going to anyway, segues right into our topic for tonight. And so assuming I don't get all wonky with the posting, today is Halloween or the day before that this is going up. So we thought, well, what do we do for a Halloween-y show? And we didn't want to just do, Ginger just had a post on the website about how Halloween is the swinger holiday. And it seems to also be the day, as far as I'm concerned, where the Vanillas try their damnedest to get as close to being swingers as they possibly can. So much so that the Simpsons Halloween special last year had Homer saying, "It's not cheating if you're wearing a costume."
That's right.
So, which is by and large true, I've noticed, of my vanilla friends at Halloween parties. But what we wanted to go into instead was hiding and the masks we wear and the costumes we wear and how we hide from ourselves and our partners in terms of what we want sexually, how we are often afraid to just go ahead and say what we want sexually, even when we have an open relationship like all of us do on this show, that we have a relationship based on with a cornerstone of honesty and openness. It's sometimes really often difficult to actually be 100% honest in terms of what we're looking for, what we want, and what we want to share with our partners.
I find a lot of that difficulty comes from the fact that there's not just one level of being open. There's many, many tiers of opening up and kind of getting deeper and deeper, kind of like an onion. You peel back each layer and you get to a deeper level. And the first level, you know, opening up, it feels like that's pretty close to the top. You can say, "I'm interested in other people." And then you start talking about the details of precisely what you want, and that can be a little bit harder to get out there.
And for most of us, it's completely a fear of judgment by your partner. What happens if they won't accept this idea that we have? And for whatever reason, often when it's sexual kinks or non-mainstream sexual ideas, we have this idea that not only will our partner say no, but they will somehow think far less of us for even asking for this thing.
Precisely. I feel like, in particular me, I feel like I have turn-ons and wants that aren't average, that aren't the average girl's, "Oh, I like this." And sometimes asking...
Sirens for, turn you on? Is that
sirens. I'm sorry. I'm in San Francisco. This is...
Oh, so you were just saying "I like this" at the same time as there was sirens. It doesn't actually mean that you get turned on by sirens.
Yeah. So where was I? Oh, yes. So... you're particularly right about not wanting to be judged, I guess, even by your partner, even by someone who's already accepted a part of you. You often will wonder how far they can accept that. And when it does come to fetishes or particular, interests, you can feel very vulnerable when opening up about those things. I know that I'm always really nervous to tell my boyfriends and my girlfriends, and mostly my boyfriends, about my big bi guy fetish. So that can be a hard one to spur on most people, especially the straight males in my life.
Has that one bitten you in the ass before?
I mean, is God.
Sharing that hurt you ever?
It hasn't hurt me, never, not once, but it's never It's never happened. Yeah, exactly. So my husband and I had for the first 2 years of our relationship, it was like a big thing, like where he would tease me with stories and it was fun, but it got to a point where it was like after 2 years of teasing and fucking talking about it and going through the ropes and being like, ooh, this would be so hot. And what if I did this? Like at a certain point, I'm like, okay, well, let's fucking do this, you know? And so I think that's as close as it comes to biting you in the ass is like, oh, it's okay to say you want it, but you really want it. It's something has to happen at some point, you know?
Well, that's the goal, that something would happen when you share these ideas, these feelings. I had an interesting conversation with one of our friends and playmates about what a fetish is and what makes it a fetish versus just a kink. And I suggested that I think the word fetish has been sort of adopted and neutralized a bit, because fetishes always traditionally in the past were the ridiculous aberrations. The porn fetish meant you could not actually do anything other than watch porn. The foot fetish meant you could not actually get off without feet. You know, it was the more extreme variant. And I think lately fetishes have sort of come to encompass what kink used to cover. You know, your kinks, your quirks, your likes, your interests are now often considered fetishes.
Kidder, I think I know a little bit about you by listening Sex is Fun. I know you had a big journey in kind of expressing to your wife what it is that you wanted in the bedroom and talking about that.
I think that everyone who's married to a Catholic has a bit of a challenge ahead of them if they want to have a good relationship sexually with their partners.
Now, Kid, were you Catholic?
No.
Okay,
I was
see,
not really
it's even more of a challenge when you were Catholic. You fought your way out, and then you can't understand why. It's like, I made it out. Why can't you? Come on, why won't you move with me?
I feel like that every day.
Yeah, I knew Catholics because I went to Catholic school, so I got to experience their world. And it never made sense to me, but I was sensitive to their insanity. So I was patient with them. So, you know, I what I found is logic can beat the insanity. So if you're just logical, and you continue and be very, it's like raising children, you just be consistent, eventually they'll come around. Wine helps get their freak out sometimes. But yeah, no, she's definitely more on my page than she ever has been. And even recently, I enjoyed her saying this. She said, oh, I'm so glad I got over the day after shame.
Yeah.
when someone took off in kind of the middle of the night, you know, and she's like, oh, I've been there, and I'm so happy I'm not there anymore.
The Swap Foos used to talk about, they just got into real organized swinging, they call it, recently, when in the past they've always been picking up vanillas at bars, and so part of their traditional Sunday morning activity was the are you okay phone call. And so they talk about how, you know, that you they would fight over who had to make the, hey, how you feeling about what we did last night? You still cool with it? Everything okay? And she said often they would get a little bit of tears in there, you know. So it's always a little difficult to
it takes time. And the best advice I have for anyone who is in a relationship where that might be happening is continually prove to them that it's going to be okay. That's it. It's just continually say the next day, are we any different? No, we still have everything that we had the day before we did this, and life is going to continue in a good, solid path. You won't be punished. God is not going to punish you. You're not going to be punished by anything. It's just, it was just a fun, it was a roller coaster ride. We got home from the amusement park. We brushed our teeth, got rid of the cotton candy that was going to give us cavities, and everything was fine.
I actually like the amusement park idea because it's like, yeah, we did this thing, and it doesn't mean we're going to be going on the you know, American Eagle every day. Mm-hmm. We're going to be doing regular normal driving around.
It's boring tomorrow, same as it always has been.
I think a good tip for the person who's doing the asking, and something I've employed in my relationships, is basically knowing that you can always ask and it's okay if the person says no, but knowing that you're allowed to ask again later. Time goes by, and Kidder, I said 2 years for me before I got kind of frustrated in my relationship and said, okay, I'm going to stop focusing on this and move my interest to other areas. How long did it take for you before you were given the ask and no and ask and no, before you got your relationship to a point where you felt like all of your needs were being met?
She was actually fast to say yes to a lot of the things that I wanted. I'm sorry if I ever gave the impression that it wasn't that way. What I had a problem with was admitting that it happened a week later. You know,
sure.
Like, let's fantasize about this thing. Like, and she's like, no, let's never talk about it again. It didn't happen. You know?
I see.
It's kind of like, you know, I saw you really enjoying Munch and Box last night. So you think you're more open to the bi thing? I'm not bisexual. Shut up. I didn't do that. and now it's...
all arguments are just better when they're accompanied with shut up.
Yeah. No, it's just she's kind of accepted that we are, that this is fun and good. And when she started coming out to people in her vanilla life that we did this, we had this thing, and it was really exciting. And then when her friends didn't say, you're going straight to hell, they said, oh, that sounds so exciting. I wish we could do that. That was a big, I remember when that night happened, and I was like, wow, that you took a huge risk. You came out. It didn't bite you in the ass. In fact, what you heard was envy from people who want to do the same thing.
And did that make a noticeable change in her outlook on it?
For me, I think it had been happening. I just didn't notice it. Like, that was the mark where I said, oh, she's made it. You know, she made it over to the side of the fence where she doesn't feel like she's going to be punished for enjoying.
Well, that's excellent, because that's really the number one reason I think that we all worry about our kinks and quirks, is because we feel we're going to be punished in some way, shape, or form. And whether that punishment is coming from the big sky bully, or if it's coming from parents, or if it's coming from our significant others, in some way we feel that whatever we want, this thing we want, is so dirty that someone might just completely punish us for even wanting it. And that's what I think keeps us from voicing those things.
It makes me think, Kidder, hearing about your journey with Jade, that Prof actually just blogged this, which was very entertaining for me to read from his perspective, is the thinking too much, that I had all these other cultural, religious influences that were there, and it was just, I was always thinking too much. And apparently, I didn't realize this at the time, but his tactic for, you know, getting me to move along this evolution was to go to the fantasy place when we were playing together and to call me on what my body was doing. You know, my body wasn't lying. I was turned on. I was getting really wet. I was getting really hot when he was talking about more than one person in the bed, or being with a woman, or all these other really hot, sexy scenarios. And
I'd like to hear a little bit more about those very hot, sexy scenarios. Never mind. Go on.
Yeah. So, you know, all these yummy things. And I was denying it in the intellectual place of, you know, the sitting around, you know, even at on date night at a, you know, dinner or something, just like looking eye to eye. But when the lights were off, the candles were lit, and we were in that really hot, sexy place, there was just no denying it. So it kind of came to the point where he was calling me on it in a very gentle way, saying, why are you denying what turns you on? There's no reason for it, because I'm not judging you. It turns me on, actually. And so that really gave me the incentive to then start to speak up and say, oh, well, if he thought that was hot, then maybe he'll think this is hot. And so, you know, I'd spring something on him, and it just kind of spirals into hotness.
Well, I think there's this whole evolution in the way that we think, you know, whether it's a term like fetish, where how that's kind of evolved in popular culture, or whether it's something like, well, am I bi, and is that a bad thing? You know, we have these feelings about certain terms like bisexuality or gay or, you know, or BSDM or whatever we want to, we feel like we want to do.
BDSM.
And
they were all in there.
Yeah, fair enough.
They were.
Don't they have to be in that order? Isn't that part of the rules? Because there seems like a lot of rules, so they have to be in that order, right?
I think as long as the D is before the S, we're all okay.
Ah, yes, okay.
Because we don't want to get spanked. I mean, well, some of us might want to get spanked.
I do. I am.
Dylan, terrible. You're wise to correct yourself. What have I done? Because the BDSMers are very systematic about everything.
Well, hey, I would rather be accurate. I'd rather be accurate or be told that I'm not being accurate. But, you know, we get on an intellectual level, you kind of have to convince yourself that you shouldn't be feeling a certain way about something. So, you know, I feel like I've done a lot of PR for swinging, and while I haven't done any direct conversions, unlike some people around here, I feel like I've done a good job of telling people, hey, you know, it isn't a bad thing to be that, because I'm pretty much normal. I just have a little more fun. And, you know, some of these other things that we've been talking about, you work through, you find out that it's not so bad, if whether it's because your body tells you it's not bad or because you kind of intellectually work through it. It's just this kind of nice process that you go through, and you get to where you want to be. And in your case, that means trying out new things and having a great time.
I think one of the cornerstones of this fear is also shame. We've been really systematically taught shame for ourselves, for our bodies, for our wants, every one of these little things, you know. And it's not just religious, you can trace most of it back to the religion, but the religiousness has informed the government restrictions on it. Like, I mean, there's no reason that toplessness for women would not be okay, other than the fact that the religious, governing bodies have kind of forced it on the regular government, which has proclaimed it so to all of us. You know, and I tried very hard not to use the religious right in that, but I think I have to blame them anyway.
Well, on the topless women in public thing, that does come largely from men's desire to control female sexuality.
Right on.
And religion is often the key they believe is that men believe is the key to doing so. So they're intertwined, but their starting place is multifaceted, and it would take us a whole nother show to really explain all of those, I think.
Absolutely. So, Dylan, I had a question for you, though.
Oh, go ahead.
And because you have come into this the most recently of all of us, and I know that your perception of the shame and all that and your desires, you work through a lot of that on your own in Burning Man.
Yep.
And you discovered a lot about yourself and what your wants are, and you then brought that back to your wife Tonya and presented it to her. And so this is a fascinating thing to me, because I'm coming from a marriage where neither of us gave any indication that we wanted anything other than monogamous sex, and we really didn't want that often until we both told each other on the verge of divorce that we want to fuck other people. So, I mean, that's a very different, you know, place to come from, because that was like the very last moment and the safety valve released. And then it was just like, oh, okay, we can do this. Okay, we can work through this. But you came with a gradual process. So I'd like you to talk about that for a second.
Well, a lot of it started with finding out why I felt guilty about certain wants and needs, and why I shouldn't feel guilty about that. I had to get comfortable with myself as a person and realize this is who I am, and get past the things that were causing me guilt and shame about it. You know, some of it was religious, and you know, and not for everybody it's not going to be that. So, but for me it was. Some of it was cultural. I'm Mexican, and there's this very strong manly machismo factor that you kind of have, kind of get brought up in. And, you know, I still find it creeping up on me sometimes, and I feel like, you know, spouting off like 15 to 20 lines of swears in Spanish every time it happens, because it just it pisses me off when I feel that stuff come up. It still occasionally gets there, but I had to figure out why that's there and why I don't want to be that person, and then just kind of work through it in my head and feel it. And the nice thing about going through that process is myself, or that process myself, is that I feel like I've been able to help other people go through it. Obviously, I went through, you know, a considerable process with Tonya, and it's not like I was convincing her to do something or anything. It was just, this is what I feel like. Why do you feel certain ways about certain things? And it took a lot of me telling her, I don't think you should feel bad for feeling that way. If this is who you are, do it. What's stopping you? And I've done that to a lot of people now that I'm thinking about it. I have several friends that I'd like to say I've had positive influences on just because I've told them, don't feel bad for feeling this way. I've never been a counselor, and I've never, you know, had an official capacity of, you know, taking people and telling them that they're good people and they shouldn't feel bad. But I feel like I've been doing that a lot lately. And so that's what I did for myself. I guess that's what I'm trying to do with a lot of people. And it's been working pretty nicely.
It seems to me that the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy slogan of don't panic should be on pretty much every book and every bit of information about sexuality, because it's when you start looking into what, as a vanilla, you may consider aberrant sexuality, it's terrifying at first until you start realizing that these people are not actually any different than we are. They're just more in tune with what they actually want out of their sexual life, and they're okay with it. And they've long since forgotten about the need to be shamed and the need to be to feel bad about their desires and their needs.
I put a lot of thought into kind of the origins of shame and why we're told to feel certain ways about things. And I guess the last part of everything floating away was, why should I let anybody else tell me how to feel about something? Once you get over that, things seem pretty easy.
I do think you were hitting on something with the cultural differences, though, Dylan. I find that, and I was involved with a very machismo Mexican male myself for a while, and we tried out the polyamory thing, and it's just the cultural background that he came from. There was so much shame and so much internal struggle with just the very basics of things that I found did come in large from his culture. There's a lot of machismo there, and I am almost positive there's lots of different cultures, such as the Catholic culture, which does the overlap with the Mexican culture.
Oh, I had that.
But there's a lot of cultures. I imagine the South, Southern people probably have a very strong views on sexuality as well. And I think culture has a lot to do with how able you are to be open and honest about your feelings.
It's hard to experiment with sex and find out what's going to happen. And so I challenge everyone to have an orgasm in front of, you know, four people they trust. And I mean the kind of orgasm where your eyes roll back into your head, your toes crack, and let it happen, and then find out that they still like you and they're not going to like be grossed out by you, because then you learn that pleasure is okay to have and that you'll still have those friends the next day. And I said that knowing how incredibly difficult it would be to even set that experiment up.
Yes,
much less feel comfortable about doing it. But that's what I did, and it worked.
Okay, well, your assignment here, we're going to take a quick break, and your assignment for the break is to run into the room with four people and really quickly, now we're timing you, have an orgasm.
BRB orgasm.
No pressure. We'll be right back with Life on the Swing Set.
You're listening to Life on the Swing Set, a podcast by and for the sexually open. We remind you that all advice and opinions on our show are products of our individual experiences in the lifestyle and should in no way be taken as anything more than commentary. Your mileage will most certainly vary. If you'd like to reach us for advice, to ask a question, or to leave a comment, email us at contact@lifeontheswingset.com or leave us a voicemail at 573-55-SWING. That's 573-557-9464. As always, thanks for listening. Now back to our show.
Okay, welcome back to Life on the Swing Set, the podcast. This week it's number 20, the sexual costumes and masks we wear. We're talking about hiding our true sexual desires from the world, from our partners, from everybody else. I'm Cooper. Joining me is Dylan, Ginger, Shira, and Kidder Caper of Sex is Fun. So now we were just now talking about little subtle orgasms that Shira would be able to have in front of her friends.
Yeah, I feel like I'd be... there's a lot to say about the whole facade and the image that you try to portray when you're being sexual. And for me in particular, being a little bit into control, I have a hard time letting go in general of things like facial expressions and poise and how am I going to be placed and how am I going to be looked at. So once I finally get...
Everyone's beautiful when they come. Oh. Everyone's beautiful.
Beautiful. Absolutely. And agony, right? Who's not yes. turned on by watching or listening to an orgasm? Oh my gosh.
Well, you know,
the
I
best
think,
thing
uh,
going.
I'm occasionally in the room with some of my friends and you know, when we go up to camp in Wisconsin or something like that, there might be 6 or 8 of us and couples that are in the same room. And even I now still feel like, well, you know, I can't get secretly freaky with Tonya because one of us is going to screw up and moan
like
a little bit.
I just like to say I like the term secretly freaky.
I do too.
And I like the image of you very, very carefully trying to get your freak on, maybe with a mask or a ball gag, I think, is that's in my mind.
That may
right
be helpful.
Here.
Well, last time we did it, we successfully got away with it. But I'm just thinking now, if I was going to pull off Kidder's experiment here, we would let it out anyway and see what happened. And maybe we'd find that some of the other couples happened to be doing it too. And then they'd start losing their inhibitions. And,
or if they weren't already, they'd see that as the go-ahead to
yes.
break the seal, as
yes.
it were, and go ahead and do the fucking that they all want to do.
Permission is very powerful. Permission is... Oh my gosh, absolutely. I think if you are that person who just puts it out there like, well, you know, we did it. I mean, either people are just going to let it be and not say a word, or they're going to be so titillated and entertained by the fact that you just orgasmed in the room that you're going to have fantastic breakfast conversation if it doesn't turn into, you know, more orgasms right there beside you later that evening. But that's fun stuff.
And then there's always the swinger dream where it just turns into an orgy, right?
Of course. Oh, well. Of course.
I think this might be one reason why I am more on the poly side of things. It's because I feel like I need a lot of trust. I do always get to the point where I can just completely let go with my partners, but it takes me a long time to get there. And to try to do that in front of 4 people, it would take 4 spectacular, wonderful, awesome fucking people.
I'm not poly, but I only play with people I really, 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 really trust.
That is important.
And so, you know, I just, I hear what you're saying. I hear the line that you've drawn for yourself, but I'm just saying I play with friends. And I guess I could say that I care about them and love them. And so maybe that's the same thing you've got going on. But at the same time, like, I've got a wife and I don't have secondaries. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I don't have relationships with them outside of friendship and sometimes play. So you can really trust people and be able to do that and have your orgasm face and find out that tomorrow happens. No problem. And, you know, it can happen.
Oh, I believe you. I do believe you.
I think we want to see Shira's orgasm face, too.
Trust
Maybe.
Us, Shira.
Maybe
we won't judge you.
Maybe if I ever get out to that desire, man.
Yeah, she's trying. She's trying to come to desire with us, Kidder.
Do it. It'll be fun.
Absolutely.
So now, is anybody against us sliding on into subject two here, the role-playing subject? Because role-playing is a way to allow you to live out these fantasies and desires without actually bringing another person in or bringing these other ideas in.
I will not object, but I will tell you this. I'm shitty at role-playing. I'm a bad pretender. That's... I do. I feel like an ass whenever I pretend. You know,
along those lines, Kidder, I've just been talking to a few people who really like the Dom sub play, and I am not a Dom, but I've been trying very hard for their amusement to be a Dom, and I keep breaking it with, is that okay?
That's why you're shitty at it.
Oh my god, love that, Cooper.
On the other hand, I really want to be a sub. I just haven't found anybody willing to dominate me yet.
It's so funny how there's so many friggin' subs out there. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of dominant forces.
Kidder, you're sub-leaning too, aren't you?
I'm Switch.
I'm very much
a Switch. I am kind of a chameleon. I will be whatever turns my partners on because I'm a desire file.
Excellent.
So I usually get mostly turned on by figuring out how to turn someone on.
I'm with Kidder. I think I'm on the same level, and I feel like when I am being dominant, it's very much for me. I feel like that's role playing for me. That's I'm going to be this big bad chick who can do whatever she wants and be very forceful and dominant. That feels like role playing.
That's what I was saying. Is you know, Kidder says he's bad at role playing. I think I am as well. Because I'm so hyper aware of the role. I can't lose myself in the role. I'm so hyper aware of it's the same reason I can't act on stage, is because I suddenly think about, am I supposed to be in this position or this position? What if I'm in the wrong position and the light comes up and it's over there? What if it's next to me instead of on me? I should be over there.
Ginger, do you do any role playing? Are you the sexy nurse, or you do costumes and personas?
You know,
yes, Ginger, do you?
Oh, it's a good question. I actually, one thing I do want to say is I do think there's a distinction, and there's certainly another podcast kind of creeping around in here around BDSM and Dom sub play and the different levels.
Agreed.
Of BDSM play, because having experience with particular kinks around Dom sub play, with prof alone, and kind of a place where we go as opposed to, or as compared to, I should say, that type of dynamic that might play out with play partners, but is more playful, as opposed to the all-encompassing going to that subspace, that headspace. It's a whole different level of relationship. So just kind of making that distinction for people familiar with that kind of play. So from the perspective of the playful side of things, I absolutely love to play all different ways. And it's always as kind of you were talking about, Shira, in terms of the trust level. I feel the same way that Kidder shared, is that the people that we play with are trusted friends. They're not necessarily, they're folks that we're friends with benefits, but kind of deeper friends. And there's a trust level there. So I feel like I can let go in that way. And I think what a fun opportunity to just stop thinking, which I think has always been a theme in my sexuality, to stop thinking about it and just do it, and to truly immerse myself in that role play and be someone I'm absolutely not. And so I love it. I think it's a blast. I feel like, you know, we don't do it enough around here. I need to get that on my list to bust out some of the costumes. Of course, with Halloween, I had my little firefighter costume on the other night, and Ooh. Prof was digging that. So it progressed way too fast from the actual putting on the costume to the playing. There wasn't a whole lot of role play in there, but the costume was cute. So
just as a little aside to our listeners, last year Marilyn and I found out in our first Halloween as swingers that the day after Halloween, you drive from Halloween store to Halloween store with their 50% off sales, and you buy all the filthy swinger garb you are going to need for the rest of the year.
We have almost worn out our swinger garb. Halloween cannot come fast enough.
It's going to be great, and I already have the Halloween stores picked out that we will go to the Monday after, or tomorrow in current weird podcast time.
So, Cooper, that sounds like, speaking of challenges for listeners, that sounds like a great challenge for listeners is to, if you don't role play, if you haven't worked it in enough, if you want to explore a little more, then by all means, take advantage of the 50, 60, 70% off at those Halloween stores.
Because and load up the things involved in role-playing can get very expensive.
Absolutely.
You know, like Marilyn is constantly in search of the ultimate high heel stripper shoes, and high heel stripper shoes are really fucking expensive. And the day after Halloween at the Halloween store, where it seems like Halloween store is basically code for slut store these days, you can get pretty much anything you want in terms of even I saw Chuck Taylor boots, which were awesome. They laced all the way up to the thigh.
Wow. Yeah, I need those. I think I need those too. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. With that said, in terms of the role-playing piece, when we were talking about that idea, working it in with a partner, that fear of judgment, that fear of, you know, what if I say something that's just a little too far over the edge? Role-playing is a perfect opportunity to work in those little, you know, if you're really not quite comfortable, you really do want to test the waters. I mean, it's obviously best to be direct and really have that conversation. But if you're working through it individually, and I identify with what you said, Shira, at the top of the podcast about the layers that sometimes I'm not quite sure if that's what I want. I think role play is such a great opportunity to work in some sort of admission of turn on to something when you're in the role of whatever. And if it just doesn't quite do it for you, you don't actually have to put out there, oh, I really want to try this through and through. You can just go into that role and try it on for size for yourself first. And if it's just not something that does it for you, then, you know, it just kind of goes away. It's not something you resurrect for another session sometime with your partner. But it's a safe place to explore those edgier places.
That is a very good tip, Jim Chair.
No, thank you.
Oops.
I heard a whoops in there.
Yeah, I hit my I hit the headboard.
Were you having a little secret orgasm there?
Yeah, so
are you trying to take up Kidder's challenge? We're not in the room, you know.
This doesn't count. There's like five of you here. No?
But we're not all there.
Okay.
Turn your camera on. It'll be fine.
then we can totally do it.
I promise not to judge you.
Well, thank you.
There you go.
I will say, as far as costumes go, I am very fortunate to live in San Francisco. There's always a reason to put on a ridiculous
sexy
costume.
So it's always the day after Halloween in San Francisco.
Absolutely. I just, a couple weekends ago, I just got out of Folsom Street Fair, which is when all of our lovely leather daddies, all the gay men who like to get dressed up and spank each other, they show up out on Folsom Street, and there's lots of booze and spanking and fun stuff like that, and everyone gets dressed up, and there's outrageous costumes for everyone, and I was able to put on my little costume, and I had my little top hat and tutu, and I was a very happy camper. So San Francisco is great for multiple occasions for costume play.
I don't know, the way you describe San Francisco, it just sounds like a nonstop floor show from Rocky Horror Picture Show.
I love it. It's great. It's not always like that, but there's plenty opportunities to make it that if that's what you want, and it's fantastic.
And that's what all fishnets and hot top hats say to me anyway.
Ooh, yes.
Well, one thing I do want to touch on with role-playing is sometimes the role-playing is a way to definitely pursue these ideas that are actually too scary in real life, these intense desires and intense fetishes that you could not pursue in real life. I know a lot of women have the rape fantasy. It's actually very common. And of course, you wouldn't go and pursue that fantasy in real life. So you instead have to figure out a way to put yourself in that same headspace that would allow you to buy into a rape fantasy in role playing.
Prof and I have played in so many different ways with fantasy and really give each other that liberty to just say, that was all right. You know, something that you do kind of invest in that fantasy and role playing and really put yourself out there. And I think it is hard on the flip side to then say, it wasn't what I thought it was going to be, or that really, you know, that was fine and I had a good time and we don't really need to do that again. And I guess I say that with those types of fantasies that might be more risque or risky, the idea of around my, I guess, one place that we've played is the idea of like come play and having unsafe sex. It's not something I would do. It's just not even on the table, obviously. It's just not even on the radar screen. But going that to that place in fantasy play with a partner just lets you, like you said, Cooper, go to that headspace of what is that like. And even interestingly enough, why is that a turn on for me? Why would that be a turn on for me? Obviously, the real deal is not a turn on for me. It's actually a huge turn off. But to go to that fantasy place with Prof in a trusted way and, you know, getting creative with lube and those types of things to, you know, create whatever fantasy it is, that's fun. That's really fun stuff, because then after the fact, you can kind of, you know, deconstruct it. And, you know, again, I always go to that thinking place, like, why is that a turn on? And not judging it, I'm very far past the judgment place, but being able to just put yourself in these fantasy positions that are more than just fantasy, where you or your partner, you and your partner are talking to one another as you and your partner, but taking it another level into the fantasy where you are role playing and it's not just costumes. It's, you know, taking on an entire different persona. And it is kind of an intense intimacy between each other when you can circle back around out of that and say, wow, that was a really intense experience. And we really let each other into this raw kind of primal place that may not be in our sexual repertoire as a true behavior with another partner, but really taking each other on this journey of this is a part of me and this is there in a fantasy way. So I don't know if that's a long meandering answer to your question, Cooper.
Do you want me to explain your come play fantasy? I know why you have it, but it might kill it for you if I tell you.
Science.
Before you explain it, I would like to give a shout out to our friends over at Liquid Silk that make the only lube that looks like cum.
That is exactly what is in my nightstand. So, of course, it's Liquid Silk. And secondly, Kidder, I may know where you're going with this, given that I just finished Sex at Dawn.
Okay.
But bring it. I want to hear it. Let's hear it.
Oh, and Hydra Smooth is also very much semen-like. If you,
really? Interesting.
Yeah, it's very semen-like. It's even the same color and it's kind of stringy like that and everything. But, okay, so your primal brain wants a lot of different kinds of semen in you. That is what is good for your gene pool. But your advanced brain knows about disease and how unwanted pregnancy sucks ass and ruins your life. So there's a combat.
And not the good kind of sucking ass.
Yeah, like the bad kind of sucking ass, the kind you don't want.
Right.
And so there's a combat between your primal, and you actually called it primal, which I thought was interesting because that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's a primal desire, but yet you know better. You know what would happen if you took that on. So you can't, like, your higher thinking will not allow you to do that, which is good. So what, and for your partner, he gets his competitive sense goes to town, and we've even shown that his sperm will behave differently if he knows you're getting other men's semen in you.
Yeah.
So it's an actual, not just psychological thing, but it's actually a physical thing for both of you. And it makes it hot. You know, the truth is that women, when they have sex and they make all those sweet ass noises that we love so much, that is a broadcast to to other men. I'm wanting to get fucked. And so it's you're playing on things that helped us survive and keep our gene pool nice and strong back when we were living in caves and hunting mammoths.
Well,
so
there you go.
It's part of us.
I love it. I love it.
So store up that semen and make a nice semen dildo over the course of 3 weeks and see if that isn't super hot for you.
Yeah, see, I heard that too. I heard that too.
The Dan Savage thing is like, okay.
Yeah, see, there's I mean,
there's all sorts of horrors that go along with that idea, that the storing of semen in the plastic baggies and making the dildo. And
but you know what? Everybody has their own stuff.
And look how
stuff.
Judgmental I'm being. Isn't that interesting?
Everybody has their own stuff, and if that makes it's hot for them and they have consent and it's all adults, then have at it. Right on. Pleasure is
absolutely
good.
Ginger, have you seen those semen recipes? They have... There's batches.
No, I haven't.
I'm going to have to send you some.
Recipes?
There is faux semen recipes out there, things that you can mix together to look
meant...
and feel like semen.
No, wow. there is also semen cookbook.
Oh, yes,
so
like cooking with semen, you know.
There's both kinds of semen recipes there. To make artificial semen as well as to use real-life semen in various recipes. Maybe as glaze.
Boy.
I don't know.
By the way, Cooper, know. You know those cupcakes I gave you last week?
Oh, good lord.
I just want to say that I was enjoying them just as much as you were.
I liked making them as much as you enjoyed eating them.
I think we're going to have to leave it there. Before we get going here, I'm going to suggest that, you know, I should have looked at my notes because Ginger, the amazing woman she is, actually put the definition for the term fetishes. I think this was Ginger who put the definition for the term.
I did.
And it means obsessive fascination, and it is also, it only applies if it interferes with productive living, which is what I was trying to say about fetishes earlier, is fetishes only real if you cannot actually do anything else because you're so fucking obsessed. That is a fetish. And fucking obsessed is a good way of putting it. So we're going to wrap it up here for Life on the Swing Set, episode 20, the sexual costumes and masks we wear. We'd love it very much if you would be friends with us and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/theswingset. We'd also be ever so grateful if you'd follow us on Twitter, and it's really following me and my various postings about Life on the Swing Set, or I'm usually flirting with Ginger, really. That's what happens on Facebook. Twitter, and username is swingsetlife. Swingsetlife at Twitter. It's too much wine, you see. You can also email us at contact@lifeontheswingset.com or call us. And this is exciting. If you want to call us and leave a super sexy orgasm voicemail, as you heard on the last two shows, we will give you a lifetime fucking membership to Cassidy.com. So it is totally worth orgasming. For did I add an extra N in there?
You did fine. I got it.
Come for Cassidy is what we're calling this. And just give us a call, 573-55-SWING. That's 573-557-9464. We were really, really psyched to have Kidder Caper join us for this show, and he will be coming back next week where we will talk about bisexuality, and it's the topic you've heard us talk about a lot without actually devoting an entire show to. So we will be back for that. I've been Cooper Beckett, and thank you to Dylan and Ginger and Kidder and Shira for joining us this week. Say goodnight, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Night, y'all.
I love you all.
Thank you for swinging by. And before we go, we have coming on the swing set. This week, we have Edward and Dee and some episode 19 inspired anal sex.
Oh, oh. Oh, yeah. Oh. 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 Thank you.